you know, we all know what Word docs are like, but Word docs contain huge amounts of information that isn't visible. Does everybody here know about track changes in Word?
Yes.
You know that while you're using Word, you can undo what you typed, right? So it clearly, when you delete something, it doesn't delete it. It just marks it as deleted. And the stuff is still there. And so if you give somebody your Word document and they know what they're doing, they can find all the stuff you deleted. Right. And they can find the stuff that you changed, you know, where you change the price, change the contract terms. I mean, I've had this happen where somebody will send me a contract and I'll say, show changes and find all the things that they changed. And then it gets embarrassing. And there's some really interesting examples about this. This is the report on the assassination of Rafiq Hariri that was released by Detlef Meles, the United Nations investigator. And when it was released, they did not take the steps you need to take to cleanse your Word document of all of this extraneous information. And when it was released to the public, it contained therein all sorts of things. So I'm going to tell Word that I just want to see the final version of the document. So this is the way the document was released. Okay? Whoops, sorry about that. I didn't mean to erase things. I just put those back. So here's the document as it was released. All right? But when it was released, this is the actual document. Here's the final version showing the markup. It included all of this sort of stuff that had been deleted. It included the names of who the UN believed was responsible for this, as opposed to unknown persons, the way it appeared in the final version. It included all sorts of information. And this is really, I think we have a link on the website now for this. If not, we'll put it up there.
Yeah, it's in the URLs, I think.
Yeah. You see really fascinating bits and pieces. You can see all of the deletions here. Certain levelies, media had the unfortunate constant tendency to spread rumors, nurture speculation, offer information, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So you see all of the things that were deleted. And we have a wonderful link of lots of examples of this sort of thing where people have let documents out, track changes on. Because if you look inside Word, you'll discover that the Word document representation of something is many times the size of the actual text, because it's containing all the stuff you deleted and all of this other stuff. It's kind of carrying it around in case you want to undo your deletions or show somebody what changed from release one to release two of a particular document. So representation really does matter. It matters in all sorts of ways. So did everybody read this story? Of Julianus Grena, who was captured and then released. Do you remember that story? So this is basically a story where this woman was captured in Iraq, released, and when she was coming, you know, when she was released coming back, the U.S. troops opened fire on her car and killed the person that she was with, okay, Nicola Calipari. And the report was released, and when it was released, it was heavily redacted. So all of the things in black were taken out by the U.S. military. They removed them from the report, just like you see here. And what I believe an Italian journalist, I forget, did, was notice that the way the person redacted it, the way they did it, was by using the Adobe Acrobat highlighter tool and use the color black instead of yellow for highlighting, right? And so it looks redacted, but you could just go into Acrobat and say, turn off the highlighting, and you would get something like this.
So is that just fluke, or is there some telltale sign that they would recognize that it was blacked out that way?
I mean, I don't know how.
They probably just guessed.
It was a common thing, and there had been other, the Washington Post, I think, had encountered this not that long before. I mean, other people had made the same stupid mistake. In fact, the U.S. military knew about the problem and had purchased some, like, Redacto tool that really took stuff out so that it was actually gone. I mean, the old way of redacting was with a magic marker. You know, you magic markered it out, and then you Xeroxed it, and then it was actually gone, right? But the new way, and the whole point of this is that with bits, what you see isn't really what you get. You know, you have to look another level down. And what you see, you know, the representation is the combination of the piece of software that's interpreting it and the data. So what was happening is that Acrobat said, oh, you know, here's a string of bits that tells me to make the next N characters look black, but I still know what they are. I didn't forget what they were. I still know how to interpret them. Another piece of software or another option allowed you to see them. So this was really pretty wild. So information leaks, right? When we have it in this sort of digital form, it has a tendency to get out when we least expect it. Mr. Tyler.
The only other point I would add is when we say, how did they know that this would be this way, is to think that there are probably lots of redacted reports that get published online of various interests to lots of different people. But it's just the fact that you've got many, many instances of these happening, and you have lots of opportunities for people to discover this.
Yes.
So it only has to happen a small number of times for it to get caught out.
Right. The other thing, of course, and this is like a basic premise of this entire course, is that what got changed when things went digital is it was possible to transmit exact replicas of originals at blazing speed everywhere. So when this report was released, it wasn't just a Xerox copy given to a small number of people who happened to be in the room at the time. It was any number of people anywhere on the globe. So zillions of people, if they were interested, could get the original, the real document with the real bits, and get to work on it. I mean, why do things get hacked really quickly? Because lots of people in lots of places can get the original. You know, they can get the source code. They can get to work on it.
Maybe I just add a couple more comments. There's a number of things that make this a really interesting example. First of all, the set of people who prepared this report was probably very small, and the set of people who were interested in reading it or in reading what was, you know, what was taken out of it was extremely large. So that ratio meant that there were not very many people to whom it might have occurred, you know, is this really secure? Because there were only a few people who saw the report before it got released, whereas there was this enormous number of people who had the potential, you know, to try to crack it. The second point, which gives you the lesson that things are actually safest when a lot of people have tried to break it or thought about breaking it and failed.
And this is a real principle.
So this is a real principle. We call this Kirchhoff's principle. When we talk about encryption later on, we'll come back to it. But you should always beware of anybody who tries to sell you something and say that it's absolutely secure and absolutely uncrackable because, you know, me and my business partner thought up this really, really clever way to lock it down. And but of course, you know, it's our intellectual property, so we're not going to tell you, you know, why it's so secure. Because chances are that he and his business partner didn't think of everything. And, you know, what you really want to do is to, like, you know, give it to the whole MIT and Harvard freshman computer science classes and see if they can crack it. And then you'll have some.
Not to mention computer classes in certain foreign countries as well.
Right.
Because they aren't, all the smart ones aren't just in Cambridge.
And then the other point I'd make about which this example really beautifully illustrates is, and we sort of talk about in the book, is that so much of what we do with computers we can manage to do only because there are compelling physical metaphors for how they work. You know, the trash can that you drop files into, it even looks like a trash can and so on. The black bars look like you've taken a magic marker and drawn across it and so on. We use these metaphors, and we have to use these metaphors because we could never deal with computers if they didn't kind of operate like familiar things. And a lot of the problems that cause these, you know, data leakage issues is just that people put too much confidence. They take the metaphor beyond where it really applies. And you know, this is a great
example. And this is such a great topic because, as Harry said, we couldn't function without metaphors. And if how many people in this room actually program? Some number. Right, so we use metaphors all the time. We say, oh, this is a semaphore, this is a this. You know, we use words that mean something, but it isn't really what the thing is. And in this larger world, just to make life comprehensible, we use metaphors that are pretty good, but they aren't perfect. And if people don't understand what's really going on, they'll end up sounding like Ted Stevens, who said, you know, the internet is not a truck, it's a series of tubes. Well, it actually isn't even a series of tubes. And Harry today will explain what the internet actually is. It's not a series of tubes. And so we have to use metaphors when they're useful and understand their limitations, understand when having some understanding of the actual functioning is important. So we talked about why representation matters, you know, and I made the comment about what would you do if 30 years from now you went to open up your document and you had written it in Multimate. Well, that's you personally, but what happens if you're somebody like, say, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts? So the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, in 2005, we had an enlightened chief technology officer, and he said, this is too big a risk. We cannot constrain, we can't store all of our documents in a format owned by Microsoft. I mean, come on, guys. You know, what happens if Microsoft decides to change stuff on us, you know, and we're toast? That would really be awful. And so this person pushed very, very hard to go to an open format for document representation. And there are some of these out there. It's an open document format. There are all sorts of things that are not Microsoft-based. And he said, you know, we're going to get off of Microsoft and we're going to use something that is publicly accessible and open source. And because you know, it's a Commonwealth. We got to worry about, can our documents be read 50 years from now? And who here has some sense as to what Microsoft's response might have been to this? Want to make a guess? Yes.
This is in the book, right?
Yeah.
This is genius. They leaned on policy to defend policy.
They just said
American with Disabilities Act and said that this is not going to be, software is not going to have the ability to you know, read it out loud.
Right. And they just fought like mad. And they did everything they could find. And so they fought the bit. I mean, they were like, nah, you know, you can't do that. I mean, no surprise. I mean, why would they not do that? Because, so just a sense as to how important Microsoft Office is to Microsoft?
As a percent of revenue.
Yeah, as a percent of revenue.
Insurance huge.
Excuse me?
As insurance huge.
I think it's like 20%. I think Office is like 20% of revenue and a much larger percentage of profit. It's a huge piece of Microsoft. And so guarding this turf is incredibly important to them. And now, next test question, which is also in the book. This is just to see if you read this part of the book. What happened to the guy who recommended it?
Fired.
Gonzo, yeah, he was out. And of course, Microsoft now with Office 2007 supports an open document format, and in theory, it's, you know, it's open source and exchangeable because they knew this was a huge problem. So representation matters because if you lose the ability to retrieve this stuff, you know, if you used Multimate, it's toast now, and you have to think going forward what's going to happen to all of this information over time. And controlling representation controls what you can do, and it's the primary deterrent to people switching vendors. And there's huge, huge, huge amounts of money that are influenced by this particular thing.